Indeed, we're going to take your questions and your incredible stories on great decisions, perfect timing, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Paul O'Brien with us, of course, and your phone calls as well. Looking forward to this, Paul. All around this planet, people are trying to make great decisions, perfect timing. Let's talk a little bit about our leaders. They're not making great decisions, and their timing is horrible. What's wrong with them?
Well, they don't have very good intuition.
No.
I mean, that's basically what it boils down to.
Well, that's absolutely true, but can you hear me? Hello, Paul?
George?
Yeah, I can hear you, Paul. Can you hear me?
I lost you for a second there. Yeah, I was saying they don't have very good intuition, and that's really the secret of timing. You know, it's a funny thing. You might think that there's some technique that we can learn that's going to improve our timing, but it's automatically going to improve when our decision-making in general improves. And when we learn how to access the intuition better, because timing is an intuitive decision. So what I tell people is learn how to make better decisions in general, and your timing is going to automatically improve, and it's going to improve incrementally. And even if you improve your intuitive decision-making a little bit, you don't have to become perfect at it all at once. If you improve your intuitive decision-making a little bit, this is going to pay outsized rewards. It's like compound interest. It builds on itself. So I recommend that people practice taking small risks and seeing what happens and asking probing questions of other people and seeing how psychic you are.
Does the big risk, Paul, reap the big reward?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's the old expression, right? No risk, no reward. Yeah, the bigger the risk, the bigger the potential reward. But a lot of times we're driven to take these huge risks by motivations that are coming from the ego rather than from who we are, rather than being an extension of who we are. A lot of times we're taking big risks because we're trying to compensate for who we think we should be, or how we're afraid we're not good enough, or how we feel like we have to earn love. I know so many wealthy people and so many executives that are driven, and they're really driven to, I think they're driven because they want love. And the only way they know
Maybe.
How to get love is to earn it, or they think they can earn it by becoming successful and powerful and wealthy. But what they really want is love. And why are they looking outside of themselves in order to compensate for something that's missing inside of themselves? Whereas if they had a better self-knowledge, they would make decisions that are in alignment with who they are. So a lot of people take very big risks and they bet the farm and they lose it because they don't know who they are.
Yeah, no, that's true. And and I've also met a lot of people, you have too, Paul, who are wealthy, but they're not happy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, wealth brings a whole nother set of new problems, and nobody wants to hear me whine about it, but it's if you're not in alignment with something that brings meaning into your life, you're not going to be happy no matter how much stuff you have or no matter how much money you have. Meaning, I mean, we thrive on meaning. Human beings thrive on meaning. We've got to feel like we're doing something that's important to us, that we're adding value. And if we don't feel that, we're going to be empty no matter how many millions we have.
Yeah, good point. Let's go to the phones here for you. Paul, we'll go to our Skype caller, Tricia, in San Bernardino, California, to get things started. Hi, Tricia. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, George. Thanks for having me on.
Tricia. Sure. Good to have you with us.
I have synchronizations all the time, and what I call it is God's radar, and a lot of it comes through the vibration of a smile, and I've had things sync up just because somebody smiles at me and I have to talk to them, and it's a link to the next and the next, and it happens. It doesn't matter. I can be writing a story about someone, walk into a bar, talk to someone, you know, the cheesecake across the street from you, and he is the identical character that I've written. I mean, it's like the backstory. I came halfway around the world to see a man with no address sat on his fence the day I arrived. And he took me to his house. I'd already been there. And it was exactly the same thing. I would be in Hawaii saying, oh, I wish I had my girlfriend's address. Walk to a Hawaiian restaurant in L.A. The next day, she walks right in. 3 minutes later, she's right there. I had seven of them in a row that were just unexplainable. I flew into Utah to go skiing, went to a restaurant. My girlfriend walked in. I meant to meet her in Bali, and I couldn't change a ticket. She disappeared for 18 months in the world. There she was, 10 minutes, only 10 minutes. She said, oh, my God, what are you doing? And I said, what are you doing? She said, this is the restaurant I used to work at 4 years ago. I'm just visiting them for 10 minutes, driving to L.A. It was just endless. It didn't matter what I do. I bought a house, same thing. Everybody said I was crazy buying this house. I threw my hands in the air, and I said, God, you want me to move? Show me the house. They showed me a vision, went online, found the house. Wanted to buy it. They said it's an escrow, and I said, call me in 17 days, I'm buying it. The realtor said, you're mad. And I said, no, when it's tagged by spirit and they say that's your house, it's your house. Now the bank said to me, you can't buy it. And I said, what do I have to do? And they said, you have to fix it. And I said, well, I'll fix it before I buy it. So I went in and spent $5,000 fixing a house I didn't own.
Wow.
And now I own. And the house is worth $150,000 more in a year just with me owning it. You see, it's like I've never doubted trust. If trust is sitting in front of me, look, the other day you had Sean Stone on, right?
Yes.
He's talking. I just said, oh, boy, I'm writing a story about China. It's like the Joy Luck Club, but it's for men and women. It's women and a daughter. But anyway, I thought, well, he really would like my novel. It's a kid's novel. So I wrote to him. He said, wow, I really like that. And I thought, well, I better check out his dad. His dad was a producer of the Joy Luck Club. And that's what I talked about. You see, it's not even, it's the map quest is God's quest. And I think when we really, really, really get refined in who we are, we're only 1 degree of separation away from anything. We're not the 7 degrees anymore. It's instant. And you just got to be in that space of just allowing it to happen. And it happens all the time. The story I was writing is about a Chinese girl with Buddha. I arrive at this house. Buddha is sitting on my deck. This old statue of Buddha. I rubbed his tummy and I said, Buddha, I'm coming back. I'm going to live here. They showed me a vision of two apple trees on both sides of this house. And when I wanted to see it, I said to the realtor, please show me. I've just got to see these apple trees, two apple trees on both sides of the house. They're just there.
Well, Patricia, let's get Paul's reaction to this. Because, Paul, this is a situation where somebody is truly tuned in all ways. And it works for her.
Yeah. It sure sounds like it. I mean, it's beautiful. When somebody is that in tune with synchronicity, which is another way of saying meaningful coincidences, life takes on a magical aspect and things start to unfold in a very harmonious way. And I have in chapter 12 of the book, I talk about the synchronistic lifestyle. And that's where you have gotten the beliefs that limit you out of the way such that you're receptive, like Patricia, to amazing things happening that are in alignment with what your intuition is perceiving, and where you start to understand that there is a reason for everything. And if you start to believe that there's a reason for everything, even though you can't prove that there's a reason for everything, and even though we don't necessarily know what the reason is, at least not right now. Maybe we'll know it in a couple of years. But when we start to operate from these visionary beliefs, I call it, and I have a whole chapter on belief engineering towards the end of the book, where I'm talking about the importance of managing our beliefs and of upgrading them. You know, I compare beliefs to apps.
Yeah.
On a smartphone. You know, they need to be upgraded. They're not supposed to be set in stone and things that we pledge allegiance to for the rest of our lives. It's called learning. Upgrading your beliefs is called learning. And so somebody like Patricia obviously has a sense of the fact that there's a reason for everything, and she's she's operating with a lot of trust in that kind of, that's a kind of faith. You know, she has faith in herself. She has faith in her ability to intuit things, and to, and she trusts her intuition. That's a great example of how things, how magical kinds of things can happen because of trust and intuition. I love it.
Absolutely. Good point. East of the Rockies, Manny in Salem, Massachusetts. You're up with us now. Manny, go ahead.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call. How you doing,
sure thing, Manny.
All right. Well, you know, finally I get on this show. I've been listening for
Yes,
years
you
now.
Did. It's a great decision. Perfect timing for you, Manny.
Perfect timing, exactly. So the reason why I was calling in was because, like Patricia was saying, you know, for Paul, it really makes sense because these days, you know, people are too noticing into their what they have, their gadgets and their cars and everything. So we're not in tune like we used to be. But I wanted to bring up a story that I had. You know, my birthday was yesterday, April 13th, 33 years old. And in 2006, I believe, I had a birthday and it fell on Friday. So I'm thinking, oh, Friday the 13th. This is going to be interesting. Well, guess what other day that was? It was also Good Friday. I looked at that as a path. I could either go left or I could go right. I have the ability to, like, manipulate situations, conversations. They say I'm a good sales rep. So I just wanted to mention that because it's pretty much these days people don't pay attention to the, you know, what they have going inside of them except for what they have in their hands. But it's just all I wanted to say. Thanks, George.
Okay, Manny. Good perception on your part, too. So, Paul, through this, great decisions, perfect timing. Let's give us a few little tips here on what you'd recommend before we go back to more calls here for you, and they're lining up like crazy. What you'd recommend people do who want to start this? Maybe somebody has had always bad timing. What do they do to change this?
Well, I think that if somebody has always got bad timing, it's like they're jumping at things. They're making the wrong moves at the wrong time because they're not in sync. They're not feeling it. I would say that what a person ought to do is bring some logic to bear on this. Like, for instance, is the thing that you're wanting or the thing that you're trying to make happen, what is the motivation behind it? Is it an extension of who you are? Is it some kind of natural extension of things that fascinated you at some point in your life? And so that's step number one is self-knowledge, and that's the first chapter in the second part of the book is self-discovery and how to get clear about, you know, who you are and what's really important to you. And like you said before, you know, I mean, at one point you were going to be a dentist, and then you had the early wisdom to see that what was really important to you was broadcasting. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people don't have really good self-knowledge. But they're trying so hard to earn love or to prove themselves or to compensate for their lack of self-knowledge by, you know, being as good as anybody else or competing or getting involved in an area that's not really natural for them, but that they think is really cool or is going to solve their problems. It's like I've met a lot of young people. I do a lot of mentoring now through the Divination Foundation, and we try to. Our whole focus is to help people make better decisions and improve their timing. And we have a website, divination.com, that's all about that. And I do a lot of counseling for kids in their 20s and kids that are in college. And I can't tell you how many people I've met, young people in school, who are taking courses that are basically... they think are going to make them a success, and they see success as something that you acquire, as something that's outside of yourself that you've got to compete and that you go get. And they don't see it as an inside-out sort of thing. And so the book that I've written here, Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, is the story about how to live from the inside out. Like, for instance, in my case, I was an executive in the software industry before I became an entrepreneur, and I left a secure position in a growing industry in order to focus on creating something that I cared about And I knew I wasn't, or I just assumed I was never going to make as much money, but it was going to be more meaningful for me to do that. And so I took this major risk, and I took a lot of risks, actually. And what I've learned, George, is that we need to take the risks that grow us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's but a lot of people are taking risks that don't grow them. They're taking risks because they're speculating, and they're trying to get something for nothing, in a way, and they're trying to get lucky. And I don't think people should try to get lucky. I think people should try to be who they are and clear a path for their intuition. So in the book, I've got all of these techniques for calming down the mind, mm-hmm. and relaxing and letting go of thinking long enough to receive intuitive insights and to harvest them. And so it's kind of a special but practical form of meditation that I teach in the book that is designed just for this purpose. And it doesn't have to last a long time, and it's not very difficult. It could be a 3-minute meditation, but we have to learn to let go of all the noise and clear a pathway for reception by the intuition. We can't force this stuff to happen. We just have to settle down inside of ourselves and own who we are.
Now, in this particular case with you, what was the moment where you hit your home run before the sale of the company? Was there that point where you knew you had finally arrived?
Well, I struggled for a long time. Like I said, for like 12 years, I didn't even pay myself half the time. I mean, I kept it together. I made payroll. I made sure I took care of my people, and I didn't lose my house, even though I second mortgaged it once in order to make payroll. And those were tough times, but I was so inspired by two things that had fascinated me when I was in my 20s. And one of them was the whole vision of multimedia software that I had when I first got introduced to computers in the 70s, and that was even before Apple even existed. And I had this vision of software really excited me. And I got a job in the software industry as a secretary when I was 24 years old because I could type. And that is how inspired I was. I just wanted to get into that industry any way I could. I was a college dropout, but I was fascinated. I was fascinated by the idea that people could write code that would deliver an experience, an interactive experience. And it was really in the early 70s that I played this game on a gigantic computer. It was like as big as my house, and it was called a mini computer, ironically, but it had less power than my iPhone has today. But I played this game. My friend worked there, and I'm not really a gamer, but the whole idea that somebody could write code, these programmers at MIT had written some code, and that could deliver an interactive, immersive experience like that, that turned me on. I was just totally fascinated by the concept of software. I thought, this is amazing stuff. I've got to get into this industry. Well, I didn't have any credentials. I didn't have a college degree. Like I said, I was a dropout. But I finagled my way into a job there as a secretary, and eventually I worked my way up in the industry by job hopping with various different startups, and I became a vice president of marketing of a high-tech company in the late 80s. And at that time, I found myself using something, another thing that fascinated me since I was 19 years old, which was the I Ching, which is an ancient Chinese divination system, which really is an intuitive decision-making aid.
That was great energy, too. Paul, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, most of you know by now we have a television program called Beyond Belief, and you can watch it at an incredible discounted deal for a month by simply going to this website, beyondbelief.com, and take a look at all the programs. And again, the number one rated show we did was with David Wilcox, so you can watch that as well. Go to beyondbelief.com. And welcome back. Paul O'Brien with us, of course. Paul, you've done a great job, I think, giving us the information that is so vital, I think, for people. This is something that you can use in your everyday life. It works in a relationship. It works in your work. It works. I think it works for your own health purposes, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it all boils down to decision making. There's nothing more important that we can do. There's no higher leverage activity that we can do than making better decisions. And you know, I made a decision just before we went on the air tonight, George, and I just want to say how much I appreciate what you do and the show. And this book for me is really a legacy project. It's a way for me to give back. And I wrote it for my grandson, and I wrote it for future decision makers. And I actually have a gift for you and the show. And just before we went on the air tonight, I set up a webpage that allows Coast to Coast listeners to download a free electronic copy of my new book for Kindle or iPad. And all they have to do is sign up for our newsletter. And that webpage is divination.com/coast. So that's our nonprofit website, divination.com, divination.com/coast. And anybody who goes there, who's listening tonight, and we're going to leave this up for a few days, can get a free copy of the book for iPad or Kindle. And I just want to do that because I have so much appreciation for you and your show, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to give back.
Well, you know, you didn't have to do that, Paul, but that you know what? If it makes one person change their ability for great decisions and perfect timing, it's worth it, isn't it?
That's the way I feel about it, George, and I really thank you for having me on tonight. It's really a lot of fun.
Let's go back to the calls now, west of the Rockies, Deborah in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Deborah, go ahead.
Hi. Hello, Paul and George.
Hi, Deb.
Thanks for taking my call. I do have a question, and I'm going to tell you my age because I feel like part of it relates to my question.
Okay.
I have almost all my life done quite well at the manifestation and the synchronicity of everything in my life. And I'm 58, and about 6 years ago, I feel like perhaps I met all my goals in all my, you know, all areas of life. I had about 9 categories, and all of a sudden I feel like I'm back at self-discovery. And I had a question for you related to any exercises one might do that, you know, has been moving along quite well and then just gets to a point in their life where they need to redefine things.
What do you think, Paul?
Right. Yeah, you know, that's a really great question. And in the book, in the self-discovery chapter, I talk about how we can get clear about what is a natural what our natural interests are, because that's really what we want to go with. Instead of trying to turn ourselves into something that we're not, self-discovery is about learning who we are. And there's a in that chapter, I talk about taking a look at what were your fascinations, what fascinated you, you know, in the stage one of life. And now, but self-discovery never ends, and as you're just saying, so, you know, you're 58 years old, and you're looking at the right thing to do. And I would say that it has everything to do with what naturally interests you. So rather than trying to figure out what to do based on, you know, the things that you the external rewards. And those are kind of secondary rewards. The internal, the primary rewards are the satisfaction that we get when we're contributing something that's meaningful to us and helpful to other people. And so I think basically you just need to figure out what you want to do in a way that contributes. And one exercise that I often recommend to people is imagine that you won the lottery. and you bought all the things that you ever thought you wanted, all the houses and the boat and the car, whatever, and you've done all the adventures and all the traveling. You've kind of gotten a lot of that out of your system, and so then you're sitting at home and you're thinking, you know, what do I want to contribute? I want to do something. I want to give back. I want to do something meaningful in my life. What would you do? So that's kind of just a nice thought experiment to imagine that you won the lottery and that you had all this all the abundance and all the things and all the adventures, and after all of that, you're kind of settling down and deciding, what do you want to do? That's kind of a good litmus test for maybe what is the right thing for you to do. Because in that thought experiment, you don't need to make money.
So not at all.
If you leave the external rewards out of it, you can get a clearer view of who you are and what really moves you, what touches your heart.
And Paul, before the break, we were talking about the I Ching and how you brought that into what you were doing. Explain that for us.
Well, you know, the I Ching is one of the oldest books in the world, but it's more than a book. It's a divination system, and it's the original change management tool. It goes back 3,000 years, and it was used by emperors and leaders to make strategic decisions. And I have a whole chapter in the book on how a tool like that can be helpful if somebody wants it to be. My system of visionary decision-making doesn't depend on using the I Ching, but the I Ching, and this also applies to things like tarot cards, basically, these are not fortune-telling systems, even though that is the way they're used by gypsies and psychics. These are ways to stimulate your intuition. These are ways to stimulate your intuition to think outside the box around problems that logic can't handle. And things that have to do with personal mission, relationships, timing, negotiations, these are problems that logic can't handle. So anything we can do to stimulate the intuition is a good thing. And I was fascinated by the I Ching as a youth from the time I was 19. And then I became fascinated with software, and I had visions of multimedia. And it wasn't until 15 years after that, when I was the VP of a high-tech company, that I found myself using the I Ching a little more often than usual, that I got the idea of an intersection between this ancient technology and this modern technology of multimedia. And this was even before CD-ROMs had come around. And that really is what inspired me, because I thought, hey, there's an intersection between these two technologies that could be really fascinating and really immersive and really help people. And I've got to tell you, George, it was the least remunerative thing I ever did. I took my entire life savings and I created I Ching software in 1989. And it was the most harebrained idea, and all of my peers thought I was nuts. And that ended up growing into a $20 million business.
Isn't that amazing? That is
amazing. It was all out of love. I never expected it to. I wasn't. Who would have thought that anything that started out like that was ever going to amount to much in terms of wealth? But I just wanted to make a living doing something that fascinated
you,
me.
That you liked, yeah. That's something. Let's go to Tim now in Arkansas. Hey, Tim, you're up with us. Go ahead, sir.
Hello?
Yeah, Tim. Hi.
Oh, I'm sorry. As a child, I had something happen to me. And ever since then, all I ever wanted to see was a UFO. I wasn't sure if I believed in them or not. But it comes down to these things that you're talking about, making these decisions. I think sometimes it's not a decision we have to make. It's a decision that we're given and made to do.
They're made for us, yeah.
Right. I was asleep in the barracks when I was in service. I worked nuclear weapons security. And something told me just to get up and drive off base and run into this girl. It's a friend of a buddy of mine. She's drunk. I made her get in the truck and told her we'd just drive around. To cut a long story short, I seen something bigger than I ever seen in my life up in the sky. To this day, I can't get it out of my mind. I just found out now I've got medical problems due to it.
Really? Tell me a little bit more. Radiation poisoning, something like that?
No, due to a test that they'd run on us.
Huh. I'd like some more information on that, Tim, if you would send that to us. You never know. You never know.
Well, there's, like I say in the book, there's a reason for everything. There are no accidents. And a lot of times we don't know what that reason is. And you know, you had an experience, Tim, and I can't explain it. And you don't fully understand it yet, but who knows? You know, at some point, it may become apparent to you that there was some good that comes out of this. I mean, I hate the fact that you're suffering from any kind of disease, but we just never know what the reasons are sometimes for a long time.
And as you look at this, great decisions, perfect timing, how important is it for people to do this, like, right now, as opposed to waiting, pontificating?
Oh, there's nothing that's more important than improving our decision-making. You know, if we learn to improve our decision-making, even just a little bit, George, the rewards are compounded like interest in the bank. If you start making slightly better decisions, it becomes easier to make even better ones. On the other hand, if we make poor decisions because we're emotional or we're over-analytical and we don't give it enough time, we don't sleep on it, we don't give our intuition a chance to chime in or to be noticed, and we make bad decisions, it becomes easier to make more bad decisions, and find ourselves in a worse situation until we're entirely desperate, and then we make a horrible decision and can end up in jail or worse. So it really behooves us to get on this right away, because there's nothing more important than this, and there's nothing more urgent than it either. I mean, we've got some big problems in the world, and we've got to start making better decisions as soon as we can, not only individually, but collectively.
Next up, we go to Vallejo, California. It's Greg's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Greg. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks, George.
Sure.
I really appreciate what you're talking about tonight, Paul. I just had a couple questions for you. I'm having some trouble trying to deal with some things that I've done in the past. I've done some things I'm not particularly proud of. An interesting correlation of them, though, the timing of them, I was always seeming to commit these acts during the full moon, and I was wondering if I could avoid some of these future timings. I don't know, maybe there's maybe some demonic spirits following me, or harvest spells or something. I also am having trouble with the timing of, how am I going to tell my family? How do you know the right time to do that? I'm really scared, that I might lose the people that are closest to me,
Tell your family about things that you did in the past that they don't know about?
Yeah, and the interesting thing is when these things would happen, they would always fall on full moons. And I try to avoid going out because I make decisions that make me feel like, I'm not in control.
What would cause that, Paul?
Well, I mean, I don't know what causes it, but if you are noticing a pattern whereby every time there's a full moon, you make bad decisions and you get into trouble, I think, I don't know what causes that. That could be the placebo effect. It doesn't really matter. I mean, if you believe that the full moon is going to affect you in a dangerous way, then it is going to affect you that way, because whatever we believe and whatever we expect is basically what we draw to us. And our subconscious is so powerful that we will, it's always trying to prove us right. So whatever we believe, our subconscious is going to try to manifest that. So I definitely would not go out on the full moon until, you get some clarity about what's going on there. But as far as things that have happened in the past, I mean, unless you have amends that you need to make to specific people, I don't think you need to confess anything, and I don't think you need to carry regrets. I don't really believe that regret is a useful form of energy. I think we need to learn to forgive ourselves and to try to learn from what's happened and let go of the past, because everything happens for a reason, including all of the mistakes that I've made, you know, I'm kind of grateful for them in a way, because even though they seemed like setbacks at the time, I needed that slap across the face or that correction from the universe in order to learn something, in order to change course. So I don't know what you've done during the full moon, but I would focus on letting go of the past and forgiving yourself. You know, if you see that you have this pattern of doing things during the full moon, I would not go out during the full moon. I think that's a very good idea.
Are some people born with the ability to make great decisions and perfect timing, even at a young age?
I think we're all born with the ability to do it, George, and what happens is our intuition gets shut down by our parents and by a factory model of education, where we're shoved into a classroom with 35 other people exactly our own age, and we're all supposed to do the same thing, and we learn to be on time and not ask too many questions, and our curiosity is just stifled from such an early age by what we call education. I call it indoctrination or domestication. But, I think everybody's naturally intuitive. I mean, little kids, small children are so intuitive. I mean, they really, you know, they feel a lot of things that we don't feel anymore because we've been deadened. And that's basically the purpose of this book, is to explain how we can come alive and how we can awaken our intuitive intelligence. And that's the subtitle of the book, is Cultivating Intuitive Intelligence. And that's really what the whole book is about. We've got it. It's our nature. It's our birthright. And it's been pounded out of us.
People have talked a lot about karma and what goes around comes around. Are you a believer in that?
I am a believer in that, but it's one of those beliefs that I find to be a useful construct. It's not something that I think we could ever prove, but it's a useful construct because it helps me to accept everything that happens. It's kind of related to the whole idea that everything happens for a reason. And I like believing that. I can't prove it, but it empowers me because it prevents me from feeling like a victim and making excuses for myself. So karma, to me, is just another way of saying that there's some kind of cosmic justice that's at work, and that if something happens, it's the result. It's the result of some cause. If something happens, that's the effect of some cause that was set in place maybe earlier. Sometimes we can see it happen pretty quickly, and then sometimes I suppose it could transcend lifetimes if you believe in reincarnation. But I find karma to be a useful belief because it helps me accept things unconditionally, even things that I don't like.
All right, I love it. Paul, thank you. Great decisions, perfect timing. Up next, presidential politics. Does that mean disclosure? That's next.